Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from englishwithkirsty.com. I'm Kirsty, and I support multilingual professionals to discover their voice in English. On the podcast, we talk about language, learning, and intentional communication. We hear about my guests' language journeys and share tips that help you communicate in a way that makes sense and sounds like you. Welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast. And today we're having another group episode, which is really cool because they're all people who haven't been on the podcast before. So welcome to our three guests. And today we're talking about something that I haven't talked about before. It actually came from our language meetup, which is the meeting I have once a month. It's online. It's usually the last week in the month. And we talk about things that are not really business related. They're about us and our languages and how we learn and how we improve the skills that we have. And one of the topics that came up was about board games and how they can be used in other languages and to help us to develop our language skills. And I thought that that would be an interesting topic to talk about, mainly because it's not something that I have done, can do, because of my visual impairment. It's difficult to find accessible games in English, which is my first language, and then to find them in another language is even harder. So that hasn't been part of my experience, but I've got some people here who can talk about that. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about games and how they can be useful and different aspects of it, whether it's game translation or working with children. And we're going to see what our guests have to say. So let's start with Harriet, because you, I guess the conversation started with you because you were talking about your work and what you do. So let's find out about who you are and what's your connection with language and games.
Hi, I'm Harry Cooper. I started freelancing as a translator about 6 years ago, and I've been translating board games for most of that time, and that's my main specialism. I translate from French and German into English, but I also proofread other people's games translations and particularly do copy editing. So there's quite a bit of copy editing of text by non-native speakers, because they decided this is how they want it in English and they just want somebody to sort of polish it up. So that's me, really.
Okay, and do you enjoy playing games as well?
Yeah, that's why I got into it. So we play a range of games as a family, and we've got a gaming group locally that, you know, we're sort of quite active in, and it's a whole range of games, really.
Yeah, do what you love.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool, welcome. And then, so I put this post on LinkedIn as a poll to ask other people. And Gabby, you wrote quite a long comment on there, so I asked you to come and join us. Maybe you'd like to introduce yourself next.
Hi, my name is Gabriela Kwahla, and I come and live in a multilingual, a multicultural environment, so I can definitely have some things to say about multilingual board games. So thank you very much for the invitation, Christy. I have been a certified bilingual translator since 2010, and I must confess that I'm in love with localization. I think I speak about it every single day, which helped me to be more open when it comes to different languages, different approaches to localize products and even board games. And I will tell you more after, because they are not so easy to translate.
Okay. And you're a podcast host as well, aren't you? You have a podcast?
Yes, I have I'm the co-host of PM versus Vendor, the team play for success with my colleague Lucia. It's the first podcast in the localization industry that brings a PM and the vendor face-to-face to talk about things that we don't usually talk. And we want to build more healthier work relationships in the industry, and to, I don't know, to destroy all that communication blocks that we have around everyone, every localization or translation role out there. So yeah, that's our aim.
Okay, cool. I'll add the link to that on our page about our episode as well, so people can go and check that out. So thank you for joining us on the podcast. And Raquel, let's find out about you.
Hi, hello. First of all, thank you for inviting me. I really, in the past, I want to say 10 years, I've been playing more board games than ever, because I made a new group of friends who love board games. So it's been really great to get back into that. But I've always liked to play board games even as a child. So it's been nice. I do work in another type of games. I do work in video game localization, but it's an area that I have an interest in. Because I've played board games in more than one language. Because I've had access to both English, not so much Spanish, but English and Portuguese games translated into board games. So yeah, I've been a freelancer for about almost 8 or 9 years at this time. I've kind of lost track at this point, but I do really enjoy what I do. So that's good. That's me.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we've got a variety of languages here and different experiences. So maybe we can look at the specifics of what languages people have played games in. So, Harriet, for you, it's German, French, and English, is it? Or do you have some other languages in there as well in
No,
your free
mainly
time?
English.
Okay.
So actually, I think the only reason we've got a French, we probably have a couple of French board games, but I think because my family's English and I live in England and our gaming group is English, and therefore we play games in English. And also, whenever games are localized, everyone wants English, so there will always be an English, basically always be an English version. The only reason we've got a couple of French games, I think, is because one was out of print in English, so we thought, well, we'll just get it in French then. And it actually, what's nice about a lot of board games is that the publisher has already thought about it going into other languages, and therefore they've taken a lot of the text off the cards, so there are symbols or the colors, and so a lot of it is language independent. So even if you had a lot of games, even if you only had a English version, you could still play it. As long as you understood the rules, you'd be able to play it with people who didn't speak English. Well,
Okay.
didn't have to read it. If you sort of see what I'm saying, so.
Yeah, it's not so much reliant on the tech side of things. But I guess it's not something I've done, but I guess if you go into a game shop in the UK, you're not going to see a lot of, I mean, it's going to be harder to find games in other languages than it might be in places outside of the UK. Do you think that's fair?
Yes, I mean, a lot of games will be in French, German, and English. Poland, I think, also has a sort of growing gaming community. I think other languages, they're the ones I know that are big markets in. So particularly German is a big market.
But on the shelves in a shop
On
in
the
the
shelf.
UK, you're
Well,
not
in the
gonna,
UK you wouldn't get
yeah.
any, there'd just be an English. But I know that they're likely to, within their own countries. Germany's a big gaming country, and France has become quite a big gaming company, a country. But smaller languages are less likely to be localized. So when you're localizing into English, you have to sort of think about, will this be clear to crystal clear to people whose first language isn't English?
Okay. And what's the story in Portugal? Are there lots of, is it only Portuguese games, or are there some English or some other
Oh
languages?
no, there's a healthy mix of both, I would say. Before it was easier to just find Portuguese on the shelves, but nowadays, since there's so many imported games and so many, English is a very prevalent language here anyway, amongst the younger generation at least. So you usually find both. If you don't find it in Portuguese, it's likely you'll find it in English on the shelves. And the same thing happens with cafes that do board games and focus specifically on having board game nights and stuff. They usually would have also in English. I don't think I've seen I've I'm trying to think of other European languages that I might have seen on shelves to be sold, but Maybe occasionally you'll see a Spanish game that hasn't been localized into English or Portuguese, but usually both, I would say. I would say both English and Portuguese are very available on the shelves.
Okay, so you've got more choice there in Portugal.
Yeah.
And Gabby says on LinkedIn that you have trilingual kids. So which languages are they? And what does it look like in your home and where you live in terms of buying games in different languages?
In our homes, I think my experience so long because you know that I was born in Romania just a few months before the revolution. So when I was little in Romania, we didn't have so many board games, and my mother has a part of the family is in France. This is why I'm also linked to France. So they send some board games that were in French. For Romanian, we only had the card. Games, the most known and the one that I played like a million times is Macau. It's a card game. And then my father went to Italy. He started working there. He worked in Rome for 15 years, so he started sending me games in Italian. So I was a bit between languages. And then his brother and sister, they moved to Germany and they started sending me board games in German.
Okay, so you're building your collection.
Yeah, that was my own story. So, and then when I was 20, I moved to France to be closer to the French side. And there I met, sorry, my husband who is of Algerian origin. So he has Arabic and French as languages, yes. And in 2014, he decided to take up a job in Algeria, who, even if they speak English, it's an Arabic country. So here I started buying games in Arabic, but they don't have a lot of games in Arabic. They still use French a lot. But in the last past years, political reasons, we will not discuss about that. They started choosing English over French. So now everywhere you see English board games. But at home, to answer your question, we have, I think, like board games in five or six languages. And they have Scrabble, for example, in Arabic, in English, and in French. They know how to play card games in Romania, in French. When I say they are playing, I'm saying that they use the language while playing. They know the rules in that language. So yeah, for us, having multilingual instructions when we are playing, it's something that normal for normal.
That sounds fun. And did you use that as like a teaching tool with your children, or was it just like something you did? Like, did you help them to learn new words in the other languages, or was it more that just they were using the other languages anyway, so they played games in other languages too?
I can't say they use it for the language, maybe for Arabic. I can say that Scrabble in Arabic is very tough, very, very tough, because Arabic has a rich, I don't master it. I master a bit of the Algerian dialect, which is a mix of Arabic and French, figure out. But while playing Scrabble in Arabic, they learn new words. Because just to give you an example, the word camel has 90 words in Arabic. The
Wow.
word wine, yeah, the word wine has, I don't know how many, but very, very many words in Arabic can mean wine. So it's a very rich language. But what can I say about board games is culture. Through board games, they were able to be more close to the culture. And this is something that I learned from my own work, from localization, that if you want to teach your kids or someone a language, don't stop to the words, go to the culture. And the culture can be brought up through board games, through series, through books. So, for example, when they play tarot in French, this is more close to the French culture than is Macau for the Romanian side, for example. And seeing that Algeria is a Muslim country also, there are many people who believe that card games are not allowed. So they don't really have games that are proper to the Algerian culture, you see? So they use the language, but not actually the culture. So that help. Culture and languages, and I don't know. It's complicated. I told you it's complicated in my family.
And bringing people together, it sounds like a really a fun experience, but I can imagine that's the same for you, Raquel, because you were saying about well, actually it was probably when we were talking before we started recording, but about meeting with other people and having these options for languages means that other people can be included if they don't speak Portuguese. Does that happen or?
Yes, sometimes not in my usual group of people who because we both speak both languages, so there's no issue there. But what this means is if we want to find a specific board game to buy for the group and we group buy for it, it means we have more options. If we don't have a language available, we can buy a different one. And even with Spanish, we make do. Like one of us will translate, one of us will help, and this helps with learning new words as well. Words you've never seen before, for example, even in English, even if we're always learning new things in English, even if we speak it very well, I think. Speaking of, the people that I game with.
Yeah, because maybe that's also the link to culture, because it's not just about language. Like if we're talking about culture, learning things about the British or US culture that you may not have known before
Absolutely.
through the games. But do you think there's enough, like, is there still enough emphasis on translating into Portuguese then? Because if you're saying a lot of people are using English games, is there still enough available for people who aren't as confident using English or don't have access in the same way?
Yes, I would say so. I would say so. I think I think the range only grows. I think it only gets bigger and more games are picked up to be translated. I discussed this with you when we had our call, so we weren't being recorded, but I did mention that, for example, with Cards Against Humanity, you can get either the international version or the UK English version that's more focused on British culture, for example. But games of the sort, especially card games, are very being picked up and localizing to Portuguese, I think. I think there's a healthy variety and it's only growing from my experience.
Which is good because I mean, I think we were talking before about that, and I was saying that if I had the US version, I might not get some of the references either. Like the language is the same, but the culture for someone who's not
Exactly.
really exposed to, well, like I'm not really exposed to US culture very much, because I try to do most of the things I want to do in my free time in languages other than English. But apart from that, it's hard. It's not even just a language thing. And this also came up again in our language meeting last week. Maybe we could move on then to looking at some of the ways in which games are localized, because it's not just translating the text. Harry, do you want to start with that? And then we'll kind of open it up to see what other people have noticed. But like, what choices, what decisions are made when people are localizing games to make them relevant for the other audience?
I mean, just leading on for I was thinking as well, the discussion we just had is about the sort of colonialization sort of idea of languages as well. And actually, I find it a shame that games aren't commonly being translated into Hungarian or Estonian or whatever, and that actually you have to rely on sort of more grassroots games. And then also, the grassroots games aren't necessarily brought into English and don't have aren't spread as widely. So, I think Kickstarter levels the playing field a bit more, but there's a cost to every language that you add. So actually, most games, if they're not in English already, will be translated into English. And then, if there's enough demand, something else. I do think there's a bit of a shame with that. Your question was about sort of
Localization
localization
and
and
the
culture
choices.
and things. So bigger games, for bigger games, the publisher will generally already have thought about localization. So they will name their imaginary monsters. They will give their monsters names that will travel across different languages. At least the Western European languages, at least. So they've sort of set in stone, and actually, the name of the game won't often be localized. It will usually be kept, because when you talk about it online, They want people to be talking about the same game. Oh, it's this game. And you go, oh, okay, yeah, I know exactly that one. And also because a lot of game names have been taken already, so they have to come up with something imaginary, often. But the games, so the big games and the complex games will, there won't be much localization in there because there'll be imaginary environments with dragons or wizards or whatever, particularly. Or they'll have already thought about localization as they were making the game. It's the smaller games, so the card games, that those sort of games often have cultural references in. And so, like you're saying, the US version will actually be different from the UK version, which is if you're doing a complex game with little miniatures and sort of an adventure story, that will be the same. It will just be translated into US English, and there will not be a UK equivalent, or any other English's equivalent. So there was an interesting example for one of these games where you had to guess, you had to come up with sort of a word or sort of an object that met certain criteria. So something was red that would fit in your pocket, was smaller than, I don't know, 10 centimeters. So the cards would give you those criteria. And the example in the French rule book was a lighter. And we actually said to the client, that isn't gonna fly as an example for either the US market or the UK market, because actually, it's not common to have a lighter in your pocket anymore because people just don't smoke. And actually, smoking is quite a is perceived quite negatively these days. So although that might work in a for a French game, and particularly, I think the age range was, if it's like 12 plus as well recommended, then actually that's to have an example of smoking that relates to smoking in the English rules, that would be seen negatively. So we actually suggested they change it to lipstick. So that's a cultural change. It's red, it's something small that you'd have in your pocket. But lighter, we just thought was a would be a bad choice. So that's part of the localization process, really, that you flag, actually, I wouldn't use this word. Or if some imaginary name actually gives connotations that you really don't want, like sexual connotations or something, you go, actually, I think you should change this this name. So there's those sorts of changes that you make along the way.
Okay, cool. And for either of the other two, have you noticed anything when you're playing games, either things that you think, oh, that didn't work, or things that you think were a good choice in terms of making them relevant when they were translated?
It's interesting. It's interesting that Harriet mentioned the small localization changes that you make. For example, the stuff that you said about a game, a name having connotations that you don't want in your culture and stuff like that. It's interesting. That's also done in video games. So I thought that was quite interesting. But in regards to your question, Christy, I've come across some localization choices that I wasn't so sure about. I cannot think of a specific example from the top of my head, but most of the time I do not have that many complaints about localized games, which is good. It's good. It means people are doing a great job. But yeah, obviously the goal of localization is it reads as if it was written originally in the language that you're playing in. And most of the time I don't, for example, I'm thinking of a classic example. Monopoly, in the Portuguese version uses famous streets in Lisbon, for example, in the capital. Yeah, it's localizations like that. I'm not sure. I think the original Monopoly uses New York streets. I'm not quite sure.
I
I'm
don't
not
know. I've only
100%
seen the
sure.
London one, but maybe that, I don't know which was the first one. We definitely have a London one here in the UK, but maybe
No.
there's versions for all many countries. I don't know.
I think it is
I
always
actually am.
localized.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool.
Because you
But
can get
yes,
your
I
own,
do.
you can get your own town and things.
Yeah. That is a very, very, very cool thing. But I've noticed that in Monopoly because I've only played the Portuguese version of Monopoly, but it makes sense that it would be that way for other languages as well.
I
But
wonder if
yes,
the
that one works
pieces are.
perfectly, for example. Sorry?
I wonder if the pieces are changed, like in cultures that. I mean, I was thinking, like in my family, everybody wanted to be the dog, and it was like the biggest point of contention. Everybody wanted this dog character. But.
I think the pieces are the same, at least for you have the dog, you have the little iron, like a ironing thing. Yes, I think those are kept the same, at least in the Portuguese version.
I was just thinking about in cultures that may not want to have a dog as their representation, whether they get changed as well. I have no idea.
Don't know.
There is one point, though, as a translator, and it's very frustrating, that actually, particularly in English, where everybody speaks English, including the client, they have specific ideas about what they wanted that token to be called, and they will not budge on that. Even if you're saying, actually, that doesn't especially work, and we would suggest this, they say, no, we want to call it that. And actually, in a German translation, so what happens, we send the translated text off, and then the client puts it into the rule book, basically, or the text into the rule book, and then they send it back just to check any typos and things. Often our text has been changed by the time it wends its way back. And there was one German game where they'd hyphenated, I don't know, a something token, say a plant token, and they'd hyphenated it all the way through, which made it look like a translation. It made it look like it was sort of in German, originally. And we said, please, we left out this hyphen for good reason because it makes it seem translated. So you can get the client's idea of what they think the English should look like, and they will change it. And at the end of the day, it's their, it's work for hire, so they print whatever they want it to be. So if they're pushing back on something, you just have to sort of let it go. The most annoying example of that was I checked PDFs. And then I, for a particular game, and when I purchased the game, there was a prominent typo. And I went back to the PDFs and I said, no, it's not me. But everyone will think it's me
Yeah.
because my name is on it. But actually, I did not. That typo was not there when I checked for the final time. So there's a. What has been printed is not necessarily what, the final files that I sent off. Because they get adjusted, or there's an extra sentence sneaks in, so we find that a lot when the proofs come back. But actually, they've adapted the language somehow.
Is this specific to games though, or does this happen in other areas of translation as well, I wonder?
Probably it's across the board. I mean, translation issues are the same, everywhere. Things being altered. I think it's most common for English. Because clients,
People feel that they can make
yeah, they
that
understand
decision
English,
then.
and yeah, and they've decided that, oh, that's not what how I would have written it, so they write it how they would have written it rather than trust the native speaker.
As an English person isn't going to argue, my Portuguese is better than the
It's just
Portuguese.
people, you get it back, and they've, oh, we'll just put this in. We can type in English, and you think that's, but it's not worked, or they've moved things around, shuffled your sentences because they understand it, and so they tend to mess with your text.
Okay. But talking about things that kind of carry over across the border. I imagine that some of the points are also relevant to video game translation. I know that's not what we're talking about, but this point about people talking about the games online in forums and wanting to have some kind of rules for not changing too much, is that right? That so the names of characters, of places, we try to keep them the same so that people can talk about them.
Yeah, it's the same thing in video games. Usually, the thing in video games in European Portuguese that can be and usually is for like games for aimed at children, for example, but not always, not exclusively. You keep the title in the original language, and if you have like a subtitle, like you have game X colon and then another title. Sometimes from the colon onwards, it will be translated into Portuguese, but that's not a rule. It depends on what the client actually asks for. But I've definitely seen discussion online, and I've participated in that discussion as well. Like sometimes specific localization choices. Sometimes people will think, I would have translated this differently. I would have done this in a different way, etc. But people on this side, on the linguist side, we know that we can't always do what we want. So sometimes we do have to do what the client wants. And that's not on us. We're not the ones who make that choice. But it's pretty, we have the same, I think we have very similar problems when it comes to board games and to video games, because the issues, and I say issues with a grain of salt, but the issues are usually the same. It's the same questions, I would say.
Okay. Maybe we should do I've done one episode about video games as a way to learn another language. Somebody shared their story about that, but maybe we should have another episode about video games as well. I was just thinking because Raquel mentioned like younger children. I was wondering, Gabby, how old were your children when you started introducing like different games in different languages? Was that did you bring them up multilingually? I guess you did, but like, how old were they when they started having multiple versions of the same game, or did it depend on the game just to which language you played it in, or?
I think from the beginning they had access to different languages because half of some at first when they're little they were in France, so they had more access to French games. And then when we started living in Algeria for several months a year, they kept English as the French, sorry, as the main language. But they introduced maybe instructions in Arabic because you find, yes, even if it's a French translation, the majority of games, at least 10 years ago, they were brought from France and they added the Arabic translation on the back. So they got in touch with the Arabic instructions.
Okay.
And each summer they go to Romania because I told you for me it's not only about the language, but it's also the culture, and the culture you will not see it from afar. So every single summer they go into Romania for at least 1 month, and there they got in touch with all the board games that I had in that house, plus the Romanian, because there is a library chain, Cărturești, in Romania, that they have like a million board games. But we talked about the localization, and I wanted to say something that in localization, when you translate from English to French, Romanian, Arabic, is the perception of English in those languages is has an important role. For example, in Romania, English is spoken and understood by many people. So sometimes companies decide not to localize the game into Romanian, just the instructions,
Okay.
because English is well received. They don't change the names, they don't change the I don't know, the name of the road, etc. Maybe they need to translate the instruction. When it comes to France, they translate everything. For example, all the Harry Potter based games are translated, even the characters. You know that they translated the characters' names of Harry Potter in French. They change it completely. So
Because they feel that would be
there,
better accepted, more like better
exactly,
received
yes,
in.
yeah, exactly. And as I told you, in Algeria, they accept French very well. It's the second language. And nowadays, they prefer English. So, if they receive an English version of the game, they don't translate it. They translate maybe the instructions. So, I think how you perceive the language in that country, that's how they will localize the game or and or the instructions. So yeah, all is about the target culture, sometimes even more than the target language. Even if the target language is Romanian, but if the culture has a strong acceptance of the English language, they will have no issue if they only translate the instructions. So I think companies, they need to not only investigate about the Telugu language, but also about the culture. And nowadays culture, because Algeria is a good example. They are switching from French to English to become more international. So they really do need to do some research. France is known. They need to translate everything. It was true 10 years ago. It's true
It
nowadays.
hasn't changed. So,
No,
but if
not
you
yet.
interestingly, from my point of view, so game names, for example, the client will have chosen the game name, generally, like I said earlier, they'll have chosen an English title sometimes, and that title may not actually work in English. So you've got a slightly awkward English title for an English version. So if the translator is sort of blamed for picking a title that doesn't especially work, it's more likely been forced upon them. So for example, the word top. So if a translation might be called top game or something like that, it sounds quite awkward in English. And French use the word top to mean best. Whereas we don't actually usually use it for top. So there's things like that. I would have no control over that title, but my name's on the thing. And on, like I said about the components, sometimes, this is your top card. Well, top card means something different. It doesn't mean best
The one
card.
at the top of the pile, it's the
It
first
means,
one
yeah.
that you get to.
So actually, the English can be sometimes a little bent. And I think gamers sort of understand that to a certain extent, that actually this was a German game and it's come into English. But I was thinking when Raquel was talking about video games, it feels very public translating games because everyone has got an opinion. And from the Tabletop Games, there's this big hub called Board Game Geek, where all the names of all the games and reviews and everything go on there. So if there's a spelling mistake, somebody will have picked it up and posted about it in a forum. And I actually had that recently, that somebody in a UK Facebook group, big games group, somebody had said, "Why is this board game? Why has it been worded like that? I don't think that's grammatically right." And it wasn't so much the grammar, it was the logic of the word. And I thought, yeah, I was involved in that. And I can't say anything. But that's the text I was given by the client. I translated what I was given. I didn't, those things are kind of out of my control. And you have to sort of sit on your hands and
You've got NDAs, you can't
not
say.
say. You can't say that's what I was given. It's not my fault. But yeah, it is a very public environment to translate in, I think.
Yeah, that's hard, but I guess it's the
It can
same.
get it can get a little I couldn't do anything. You don't want to get too defensive because you want to come across as, like you're justifying everything, and but sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you can't say anything and you just have sit there and read it and be like, yes, I agree with you, but it's not my fault.
And video games, I've noticed particularly the translators get blamed, but it's actually they weren't given enough information. So I've proofread a couple of games in English, video games in English for an agency, and you don't generally don't get any images. You just got a few words in an Excel spreadsheet. And you've got to guess the context a lot of times. So there were huge amounts of questions. And that depends then on the, obviously these are coming from translators as well. So there's language gaps and everything. And trying to get information out the developers can be really, really hard sometimes. And I was quite
Yeah,
surprised at how
sometimes.
little information actually you're translating on.
Yeah, I guess it's the lack of context as well. People like can criticize, I don't know, it could go into different directions. It could be video games, it could be subtitles, it could be whatever, but without understanding some of the restrictions that people are working with.
And that's why you need experts in that area as well, because a gamer will know, oh, well, actually, that's going to be a menu. And I will know, oh, that must be a token. So often when I request information from a client, it's because they haven't sent the images of the cards, which they'll have all sorts of symbols on, so that you can only understand how the game rules play out by seeing the symbols on the card, or even, what the cards look like, basically.
Yeah, it's context, isn't it? You can't work so well. You can't do your best if you don't have all the information that you need to do your job properly. So just coming to the end, unless there's anything that anyone wants to add, I'm just going to ask you about any new games you've discovered or favorite games you'd like to recommend that maybe not so well known. But before we do that, is there anything anyone else wants to add about the like what they've learned from working with different games or with children or any more of the translation type points, or should we go on to recommendations?
I have a piece of advice for parents or tutors, because sometimes we even have people taking care of children that they are the parents. Children are like sponges. They absorb the information very quickly, and you have to give them the tools to learn. So games, series, books, even in other languages, they can open their curiosity. Don't, because I have many English from UK or from United States that they are complaining that their children are monolingual, that they only speak English, and they hate that because they come to Europe, for example, or for the ones that are in U.K., they travel in Europe and they see that people in Spanish speak two, three languages. And even in France, there are a lot of children speaking French, Arabic, maybe because we have a lot of immigrants, etc. But they feel that they missed out on this multilingual experience. And this is why, even if you can't teach them, even if you are a monolingual parent, give them the access to other languages. Let them befriend people from other origin. Let them be curious. Let them try Japanese if they want. Let them try, I don't know, another Portuguese or another language. Maybe they will love it. I feel that some parents, they want to stick to English, to French, to the main languages, because that are the languages. But now I regret that I didn't study Chinese, for example. I was in a Chinese area some years ago, and I regret now that I didn't go further. So don't stop the children. Give them, even bring them to playgrounds where we have children from different backgrounds. It's nice. Multilingual and multicultural children are very open-minded, and they can teach you a lot of things.
And
This
they
is
will
what I
find a
can
way.
say.
If they want to play together, they will find a way to make that game work. And
Exactly.
yeah, I think that's one of them. Well, it's not the main reason, because the main reason was I met some people, but that is one of the reasons I've always been interested in other, like I speak German, but Romanian came because we don't learn Romanian at school here, but I thought this would be fun. I know nothing about this language. I know nothing about this country. I want to learn something that isn't just, what we do at school. So that's where that started. And also I met some people and they kind of encouraged me to do it as well. But yeah, don't limit your children to your own limits of what you understand. I didn't really have so much exposure to other languages as a child. I made up for it afterwards. But yeah, I think it's really good to, like we were talking about the games or meeting other children, it's doing activities that are fun, and it's not just making languages seem like something you have to do at school and you have to learn and it's hard and you get tests, like doing other activities that make a language come alive and be part of their normal life is a really good way to make them more appealing.
Yeah, I just a quick note. I learned a bit of Cornish over the pandemic because
Okay.
there was nothing to do, was there? So I decided I was going to learn some Cornish when it popped up. And actually, that's a really interesting sort of case study for languages. They're really trying to grow usage of Cornish, and doing well at it. But they're trying to create everyday culture. So although they've got books and things from, previous centuries, actually they've got to create new Cornish resources so that people can read, children's books and play games and all this sort of
Keep it
stuff. So actually
alive.
the big push to create this culture, because that's what language brings, is culture really.
Culture connection. Okay, so just to finish up then, does anyone have any recommendations, anything they want to share, any games they've discovered or translated or played with the children recently?
I have one that I was the proofreader for, and I actually thought I think I've translated like 100 games. Well, translated, sorry, not translated, half proofreaded or edited, so 50 and then translated 50. So I feel as though I've done a tour of a lot of games, and now and then, some pop out basically. I think, oh, that would be a decent game, and I got it. It's a little game called Canal Houses. And it was, I can't remember its French name because it did shift name. And basically, you're building tall Dutch houses with your cards along the river, and you have sort of objectives. So this house has to be four cards tall, and this one has to have three cats in the windows, and this one has to have this number of plant pots, and this one has to be taller than the other. And actually, for a small, very small packaged game, there's quite a lot of added value, as you're just trying to get these points. And you have to, it's the game ends when one of the players gets four roofs on their houses, so they've got four complete houses, and then you count up points. But it's quite a nice little game, Canal Houses.
Okay, cool. Anyone else?
If you are, this is not a game, it's a book. You know that I'm obsessed with books. And if you are reading in French, or if you want your children to read more in French, there is a book, une enquête. It's like the pages are not in order. You have to cut the pages, and you have to, no, they are actually pre-cutted. It's called La Mâchoire de Caïn, and you have to read them and try to figure out the true order of the pages to resolve
Okay.
the enigma. Yeah,
Like a
so
puzzle.
I will send you the link. So this will be a
Lovely.
fun, yeah, this will be a fun thing if you read in French, or if you want to learn French, or if you want to teach someone French. Then, for example, instead of giving them a French book to read, maybe you can propose this book. It will open the curiosity. They will have to think. And it's actually, I think, if you only one or two persons were able to sort it out, and if you are able to put all the pages in order, you will win 1 year free book, something like that.
That would be really good for language learners as well.
Exactly. I don't know.
Fantastic.
Maybe they have it in other languages. This is something that maybe we can check. I don't know if there is in English. Maybe they have an English version. I will send you the link. And
Yes, please.
because I see that the author is English. Edward Boyce Matters. It's Cain's Jawbone in English.
Cain's Jawbone. Yeah, I found that.
Yeah.
It feels
And
like
it's just.
a busman's holiday for a translator, trying to work out which order the pages were meant to be in.
Especially if there was like a sentence that got chopped in half, and you, as the translator, have to make sure that it's going to line up when it goes.
I've had a
Exactly.
game when we said, what is this token? You haven't mentioned this token. Oh yeah, that shouldn't be in there. We got rid of that one. It's okay.
Okay,
Yeah.
so we'll Harriet, if you've got the link for the game as well, we'll include it. So we'll have a bit of information about everyone who's been here today, and then we'll put the links, some useful links as well. Raquel, do you have any recommendations? You don't have to. I didn't put it on the list before, but if you've got anything you want to.
I don't work in board games, sadly, but I do. I'm not a recommendation per se, more of a comment. I've recently started playing Dungeons and Dragons, and it's really fun. I recommend everyone to make your own character and go on an adventure. That's always fun. But
Yeah.
yeah, that's my recommendation of the
Yeah, I've done that as well. Yes. Okay. And that can be in, if you really want to challenge yourself, find a group that plays in the language that you're learning and wanting to improve, and find a nice group, people who are going to be kind. And yeah, use like make it a hobby, make it something you do for fun in your free time rather than just something, like bring together hobbies and learning is the best way to learn because then you're really motivated to do it because it's your hobby as well, or it's something new that you're exploring. Okay, well, thanks everyone for coming. It's been really interesting. A lot of things that I hadn't thought about before I started speaking with you. So that's been really interesting. And I think we will have another session because there were quite a few people who were interested in talking about this. So we'll be bringing another group session about this topic, but with different people and different ideas, hopefully. It's not recorded yet, so I can't promise you, but that is my plan to bring together the rest of the group in another session. Thanks everyone for coming, and yeah, keep having fun with games and languages.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.